Right now it is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet. We bring in Jill Goodman, and she can take over from here.
No. Hey. Woof, woof. Okay.
You got to do the intro.
But where's the woofing?
Why would you start your intro?
Oh, I see.
We'll bring the woofing in.
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, howling, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440. MillertonVet.com. With us, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Hello. Good morning.
Am I crushing?
Are you crushing? I'm not sure. I'm not going to get involved with this conversation this morning. I'm not sure what it's all about. So I'm going to say hello. How are you both?
We are terrific.
We're fine.
We are terrific. And someone didn't give us information, and I'm saying that's because they didn't do it. And Marshall's saying I should be nicer about that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an unusual conversation.
Okay. Well, then let's go to Chris in Hudson instead, who has something more relevant, which is I keep my dog on a couple of oral medications for parasite control, Bravecto every 8 to 12 weeks for ticks and fleas, plus monthly heartworm preventative. She's one of those Heinz 57 mutts that's not exactly small and not exactly medium, and at roughly 23.5 pounds, she tends to fall between the weights given on the box as a dosage guide. I'm never sure if I'm giving her less than the dosage, but I don't want to put a strain on her liver either. What do you suggest? Chris in Hudson, endorsed by Jill in the studio.
Bravecto is supposed to be given every 12 weeks. That's my first comment. So if you're giving it in every 8 to 12 weeks, then you're overdoing it. So if you're concerned about the whole weight category, I'd be much more concerned about giving it more frequently than it's needed, because it is supposed to work really well, almost 100% for the full 12 weeks.
All right, and so. I just want to interject, because I once read the Bravecto instructions, and that 8 is definitely on it.
So I think that you probably could give it safely for 8 to 12 weeks. But
your preference is, okay.
So if you give it at 12 weeks, you should have almost, you know, full control up to 12 weeks. Once you start getting over 12 weeks, then it starts to drop off fairly rapidly.
Okay.
So it shouldn't be necessary to give it less than every 12 weeks. So that would be the first thing. The second thing is that, you know, all I can say is about the weight categories is that I would stick with them, because the research, I don't think the research is super extensive. They had to make the cutoff somewhere, and I have no idea, you know, where they. So the second size up is 10 to 22 pounds, and then we have 22 to 44, I'm pretty sure. And so, you know, somebody made those cutoffs for a reason, and I don't really know why that is. So who knows if it could be protective for an extra pound.
Again, this is just the reason I said endorsed by Jill is because these are absolute problems that we have had in our very mudroom, looking at the dog that weighs 23 pounds and looking at the thing that expires at 22.
Right.
And trying to figure out whether to, which until usually in puppy, you know, older, safe to give puppy case, but they're going to grow. What do you do? I guess what I would ask is, do you go lower? Do you err on the side of low, or do you err on the side of high?
It depends on the. So Bravecto is only approved for dogs who are 6 months and older. So typically, so the reason for that is that they don't want the weight category to change while they're on the drug. So while they're, you know, you give it, and the dog shouldn't be growing into the next weight category. So if you've got a six-month-old Great Dane, that might be the case. So you want to err on the side of caution and give the higher dose. It is a, you know, the safety studies are very good with Bravecto. You can give it to a pregnant female, lactating female, which is very unusual. Other than that, I'm sure that, you know, there are a long list of potential side effects. I'm not seeing anything that I am pinpointing to a direct side effect of Bravecto. So I guess it also depends on the size of your dog. So if you've got a dog who's 10 pounds overweight and is 23 pounds, I would be more likely to, you know, try to get my dog to lose that pound and go with the 22-pound dose. But if you've got a really thin dog, then, you know, they probably should weigh 25 pounds, and you're trying to maybe get weight, keep weight on them, I would go with the higher dose. But basically, you're going to be safe either way.
Okay.
So if you're going to be safe going with the dose that your dog's weight falls in, then that's what I would do.
Okay. And if you're over under, you wouldn't want to fluctuate. So
I don't think there's any reason to do that.
So
you know, if I had a 46 pound dog, I would give the next size up.
And what if you had a 23.5 pound dog, which Chris and Hudson has?
Then I would give the 22 to 44 because I don't know any. Because I don't know the details of whether the coverage would be adequate with the lower dose.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. And that is clear. And that is such a rarity these days that I'm going to move right on to the next question, which is Taylor in Birmingham, Alabama. Can you settle this now before fall rolls around again and hunting season gets underway? I'm worried about my son getting sick from touching dead squirrels because I had a cousin who got really sick from tularemia. Is that...
Mm-hmm.
And it was bad news. I'd rather he not be doing it at all, but I don't think I can stop him. So are there precautions he can take?
So in Alabama, it sounds like you go out and shoot squirrels. is that what this is?
It would seem that way.
Okay. So
you
he's
hunt.
Picking up. So he's hunting squirrels, but I wonder if you eat them.
Brunswick stew came from someplace.
Okay. So I'm hoping that they're going to eat them if they're killing them. So I would just wear latex gloves, send him with some latex gloves, and put them in his pocket. And when he picks up the squirrel, then wear the gloves. Use the tularemia is out there. It is in any kind of wild rodent, so mostly I believe rabbits. But
if you shoot that's a weird question. But if you assassinate a rabbit, can you eat it?
Sure, if you cook it.
Well, obviously. Sorry. To me, obviously, but probably in this climate.
I mean, rabbits, I imagine, have a little bit more meat on their bones than squirrels do.
Oh, yeah. No, I actually, lapin, it is definitely a brace of rabbit. It's
Wild rabbits don't have a lot of meat on them. But in any case, I would, you know, when you're killing a wild animal, they're going to have parasites on them and everything too. So,
you have to clean them up.
Well, yeah, you have to. Right. So wearing gloves would be a really good idea. Latex gloves, and they're really inexpensive. You can buy them at the CVS.
Okay, I'm going to just stop here because it's early. Melanie and Reinbeck, I hate to clip my dog's claws almost as much as he hates me to do it, mainly because every single time I seem to make at least one of them bleed. I never do it unless they're getting really long and I try to only trim a teensy bit off, but still I always find blood spots on the floor afterward. On one paw, his claws are transparent, so I can more or less see the vessels, but even though I try to use those as a rough guide to the other claws, which are black, I always get blood. What's the trick to getting it right, and should I have one of those styptic pencils on hand, or is it okay to let him lick it better?
That's a lot of questions. I'm going to start from the beginning. So I think, you know, experience is so important in clipping toenails, just doing it a lot. So if you've got only one dog and you're clipping the toenails every 6 weeks or something like that, then it's not, you don't ever get used to it. That being said, there are some dogs whose nails are so long and it appears that the quick is longer, so that when you take off what would normally be an okay amount of nail, then you do get some bleeding. Using the styptic powder or pencil is absolutely fine and I think is indicated. You want to control the bleeding. If your dog is licking it, then usually it means that it hurts. So
that means you're going too low.
So you're probably going too low. But I have seen dogs, so this question could be a tricky one. So either this person is actually going too low, or that this dog is one of those who appears to have super long quicks, and so they can't even walk on their nails. If you've got a dog whose toenails are so long that they're raising the toes up off the floor, throwing them off balance, then you need to get those toenails clipped professionally and or maybe have them Dremeled if you have a dog who's not so afraid of the Dremel, which can spin and wear down the nail, and have it done every 2 weeks to see if you can get that work that quick back. So if you're having it professionally done every couple of weeks, keep the nails back to see if you can work them back far enough so that there is a comfortable way to walk. This is an unusual situation that I'm talking about, but it almost sounds like that's what's being described.
And I have one of those dogs who, in fact, the blind spaniel, we have started Dremeling her because it's just such a... because that seems like it's an easier way to start working on these incredibly long nails. And she's not meant to walk on her. A long time ago, you were very clear, not just with her, but during a question, where it's not ideal for dogs to use their nails as their weight. Their weight should be on their paws, yes?
Yes.
So, and I don't know how many people focus on that. And in this particular question, by the way, because it starts with, I hate to clip his nails as much as he hates me to clip them.
That's
I would almost start with, you know what? Find a friend who's a groomer, or find, you know, or see if there's some way to get the vet to clip, because it just sounds like it's traumatic all around. It just sounds traumatic all around to me.
Yeah. I tend to do the flat clip and then clip off the front of the toenail too, where there's no quick there, so that the nail is rounded a bit, so they can, that foot can roll over a little bit easier, and so that they don't have sharp edges on the nail. So there are, you know, ways to do this that will work for you. And if you've got someone who can work on them for you every few weeks, then, you know, get them back to a reasonable length, and then you can take over from there.
Yeah. All right. Pat in Winstead. I'm trying to sublet my house for the summer, and one of my prospective candidates is a lady with two parrots. Do I need to worry about bird diseases? I don't know a thing about birds, but I know there's such a thing as parrot fever.
Parrot fever is psittacosis, or I think it's also called ornithosis, but it's caused by a bacteria. It's not super common. It's a chlamydial bacteria, and it causes birds to get quite sick. People can get chlamydia from birds, and I believe it's in the feces. So if you've got a bird who's been sick, it is a potential threat, passing the bacteria in the feces, and then that bird poop gets very dried out and gets aerosolized, and you breathe it in, or you might get it on your hands. So I think that with this situation, you know, you ask the people who are renting from you to let you know if their birds get sick and die. Just make sure that there's two healthy birds there when they leave, and then make sure that you do a good cleaning, or they do a good cleaning. So you want to make sure that all of the bird material is out of the house, you know, the newspaper that lines the bottom of the cage, and that a good vacuuming is done, and open the windows and air out the house. I think that would be a reasonable situation.
Okay.
To protect yourself. So there are lots and lots and lots of people who have birds, and psittacosis is not something that you hear about people getting very much.
Okie dokie. And do parrots stay in cages by and large?
It depends on the parrot.
Okay.
Yeah, my understanding is that psittacosis is more common in the parakeets and the cockatiels.
The smaller ones.
Right. Yeah, so the larger parrots will tend to live outside the cage, which is kind of nice to have a big perch for them.
Yeah. It's them swooping all over the head. Okay.
Well, or they'll have their wings clipped, but yeah, they do.
Oh, they can fly still.
Max can fly a little bit. Yep.
Max could fly. That was interesting. Never mind. Jim in Torrington. My wife is expecting a baby. Our 6-year-old daughter has 3 pet mice. We read about something called lymphocytic chorioamnionitis, and now we're worried the mice are a threat to the pregnancy. Our daughter's pretty much ready to run away if we get rid of the mice, though. Please advise.
So lymphocytic chorioamnionitis, my understanding is that it is more common in, that it's, number one, it's, I don't think it's commonly carried in mice, but it would be in your regular house, wild house mouse. So the mice populations that are sold, the domestic mice populations that are sold to people, you know, that most of the breeders are going to make sure that they don't have that in their population, and I think it's less likely for them to have it. So it can be transmitted. It's a virus. It can be transmitted to people with handling. So I would say, just as a pregnant woman would not want to clean the litter pan, be the one to clean the litter pan, I also would not have them cleaning the mouse cage or handling the mice. So if the pregnant woman needed to handle the mouse, the mice, you know, use gloves, use precaution. But this would be more of a, I would actually look this up, you know, under the Centers for Disease Control, see how common the situation is. But it's not something that has been brought to my attention as a huge zoonotic disease from domestic mice. But domestic mice could get it potentially from all the mice running around in the house. You know, good mouse control is always a good idea. Not so easy to do, especially when you have small children and you have lots of other things to do, and you find the mice poop in the, you know, in the drawer with the whatever. But you
surround wrap.
That's always the best way to do. Set out your mice traps and try to get your mice your wild mice under control. Does that explain the? Is that a good answer?
That is a perfect answer.
Do you have questions to that answer?
No, I'm going to say, Jim, don't worry about it. You don't. Your daughter is not going to run away, and don't have your wife deal with the mice.
Exactly.
That's what I'm. That's my my crushing response to that question, which I think is pretty sensible.
Right. My disclaimer is that I am not a human doctor, as we know.
Right. And we actually have to say that. So you're not a human doctor, but from a veterinary perspective, you should be able to have two children.
And being pregnant and handling, you know, feces from animals is probably not the best idea.
Yeah.
At the same time, doing those things at the same time.
Right. That's and that's a pretty easy. Okay, now I'm going to just ask you briefly. Let's say you're pregnant and you have a dog and you're walking the dog in New York, and you have to pick up after your dog. Do you?
So you use those bags.
Yeah, bags.
You know, you put your hand on the inside of the bag, and that's your glove.
But that's so basically, wear a glove. Is that what
wear a glove or use, I mean,
okay.
The bags, you put your hand on the inside of the bag, pick up the poop, roll the poop right side out, and then dispose of it. And always wash your hands well.
Of course, but people are such literalists that you just really have to say.
Yes, I would be more concerned about walking around in New York and touching the handrails and things like that.
Bathroom
so you've really
door.
Got to, you know, you've got to keep your hands washed and try to protect your unborn baby from all kinds of things, being careful to disinfect, or not disinfect, just wash stuff off your hands.
All right.
I have a question for Pet Files Ask the Vet.
Okay.
Okay, Marshall, in this other
just,
studio.
Just one quick question. I purchased these gloves now, you know, to take hair off dogs and animals.
Mm-hmm. That you saw on Facebook?
No, that I actually saw actually
on
done on TV on an actual show.
Okay.
And they work really well, but with my one dog, she shivers when I do it with her. Is that, you know, should I stop doing it on that one dog, or is that just the way her body feels like every once in a while when you get touched, you get goosebumps and stuff?
So if it's an actual shiver, or it does her paniculus muscle just... So the little muscle on the skin just moving independently?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the paniculus reflex. So that doesn't necessarily mean that she doesn't like it.
She lets me do it where she doesn't like to be brushed with a brush.
Uh-huh.
She'll let me do this for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, to pet her with this, and it takes off an incredible amount of hair.
Yeah, I think that's great. You're also increasing the circulation to her skin. So, you know, if she is, you say she lets you do it, but if she's really objecting, if she was really uncomfortable, she would object.
No, she wasn't. When she's uncomfortable, she looks at you and she lifts her lip and you know to stop. Now, LJ doesn't care. He just, you know, you can do it all day long on him. But with her, she was very particular, but she'll let you do this for 5-10 minutes with no problem.
Mm-hmm. Her personal physician's position is she'd bite you if she didn't like it.
So it depends on the sensitivity.
Set the pressure.
You know, of the skin. So I think she's just probably more sensitive.
Right.
But I think it's a great thing to be able to do if she won't let you brush her, to have that on your hand and be able to remove some of that dead hair. Especially this time of year, I started to see hot spots this week.
All right.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, and now Andrew...
Back to the questions.
No, that was a question. That's why I said Marshall in the studio. And now we go to Andrew in Sharon. Besides tick preventative medicine, should I be putting something topical on my dog's legs before we go out in the woods for a walk?
That's a great question, and one I get a lot. Well, a comment that I get is, of course, we're using the tick protection, which kills the tick before they can, theoretically, before they can transmit disease after they bite you, after they bite the dog. However, my dog is running in the woods and carrying home 40 ticks to me, and they're crawling off my dog and onto me, which I'm not taking Bravecto, obviously. So what you can consider is something for repellent activity, and something that's safe would be an essential oil spray. So essential oils are plant oils. They're called essential because they carry the essence of the fragrance of the plant, not because they're absolutely needed for life, but they are oils that can help to repel insects. And so I do spray my dogs if they're going to be running, if they're off leash and they're going to be running out in the woods or in the tall grass. But you need to, the effect doesn't last very long. So I'll take an essential oil spray that's made for as an insect repellent, usually for children. There's one called EcoSmart that I've used. There's another one called, and EcoSmart has, I think, rosemary oil, some lemongrass. Lemongrass is a common ingredient in the oils that repel insects. Eucalyptus oil, geranium oil, some cinnamon oil, those types of things. There's another one called Repel, which has lemon and eucalyptus in it. I don't like the smell of that. My husband uses that. But we spray it on us, on our clothing. And then we also spray the dogs if we're going in a heavy tick area, and especially on those few weeks in the spring and the fall where the ticks are unbelievably prevalent. And you're still going to find some ticks. You always need to check them at the end of the walk, but you do. I do find that it helps, especially if your walk is only, up to 30, 45 minutes. If it's longer, if you're going on a couple-hour hike, bring it with you and spray them again. There is a new product that I have bought and not tried yet, but I have some good feedback from people called Tick Hex, which also has neem oil in it. Okay. Neem is actually a naturally occurring, so it's from plants, insecticide. So
how does it smell?
It doesn't smell very good.
Yeah.
It smells like sulfury.
Yeah.
But it's combined with...
I thought I mentioned that.
Okay. In the Tick Hex, it's combined with... essential oils,
yeah.
So it doesn't smell so horrible. And supposedly, you can use this once a week on your pets. So, obviously you're going to be getting some exposure to it, but it is supposed to be safer. It's naturally occurring. I don't know how much is in it, but I know that the half-life is fairly short. That's why I'm not sure if it's going to hold up for a week. I think the half-life...
Question. I'm interrupting. Could you spray this, for example, Tick Hex or neem oil plus, on your dog before you go walking?
You could, absolutely. What I don't know about the neem oil is that do you really want to spray it every day? So I don't know. It is a pesticide. It's in a group called pesticides, and you don't really want to expose yourself to huge amounts of pesticides.
Constantly.
So you have to consider how much neem oil is it, how fast is it going to go away on my pet. So obviously, if they're swimming, then it's going to be taken off. But I would try for this particular product to spray it once a week, and the feedback that I'm getting from two people so far is quite good.
Okay. And then what about your people who have, like, noses that are just like, oh, I can't stand the smell in my house?
There's nothing I can do about that. I can say
you
that
you wouldn't know anybody like that, would you?
No, I wouldn't know anybody like that. The EcoSmart smells like bubble gum. And that Repel that we use has a very strong eucalyptus.
Scented candles.
Somebody once used a detergent on Marshall's thing that absolutely, he looked up, I was like, something smells, and he looked up and he said, double bubble. I was like,
but yeah.
I knew exactly what that was.
And I'm very sensitive to aerosolized smells.
Yeah.
Everyone in my office knows, and I start coughing, and run out the back door.
You made fun of me years ago. I used to tell you, I used to put garlic and onions in oil and just kind of saute them to get the smell.
Oh, God. Yeah, I just, all right. This has been an episode of some food. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you.